Hello everyone, you're listening to Cloud Next, your go-to source for cloud innovation and leaders' insight, brought to you by Global Dots.
The alarm goes off, marking the start of another day. Coffee in hand, you settle in, ready to tackle the projects that drive innovation forward. But instead, your morning evaporates into a whirlwind of manual security checks and firefighting. The digital landscape races ahead, and yet here you are, anchored by tools and practices that can barely keep up with yesterday's threats. In this era of technological leaps, where new vulnerabilities emerge before the last patch has been applied, there's a silent battleground that every IT cybersecurity professional knows all too well. It's the tension between sticking with the old school manual methods that have been the backbone of cybersecurity for years, and the shift forwards towards automated defenses that promise to revolutionize how we protect our digital world. Every missed coffee break, every evening spent combing through logs, and every moment of innovation lost to the mundanity of routine tasks underscores this struggle. It's not merely a choice between tools, it's about how these decisions impact your work life, the security of your digital assets, and innovation potential that could be unlocked with a shift towards automation. Today, we're zeroing in on this challenge with Alex Zielicki, Head of Cybersecurity at Plus 500, who will also take us through the nuances of balancing instinctual quick fixes against meticulously calculated decisions in security management and the dedicated art of resource optimization in the quest to close the ever-present security gap. Alex, before we start, what should the people know about you? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, Nash, first of all, that sounds really horrible. Is that my life, which you just described? I guess we'll talk about it.
I hope that introduction is not you, actually. I really hope that that's the world you're going to tell us how we can avoid. So, or else we have a slightly different podcast. But hey, either which way, it should be interesting.
Yeah, it's. It really depends on whether you look at it from a slice of life perspective or like motivational, self-improvement perspective. So we'll try to go the other way, right?
Let's aim for that, for sure.
I'm Alex Zielicki. I'm 35, head of cybersecurity at Plus 500. I've been in the field for 15 years, more or less. So I've done a lot of interesting things, in my opinion. I have at home my spouse, who's a musician and an artist, Gili Kimchi. And we have two very adorable cats. Yeah, that's me, more or less.
Nice. And for people who possibly don't know, also, Plus 500 is a, I would roughly describe it as a share trading app. But as you can imagine, anything to do with a financial gain is highly targeted by cyber criminals everywhere. So Alex, as the head of a cybersecurity, you can imagine he has unbelievable, stressful evenings and nights. But I know previously you've mentioned taking quick and dirty approach over the meticulous by the book strategy, which goes against what a lot of people in cybersecurity would do. Can you give us a specific instance where you gave this approach in Plus 500?
I think that first of all, I wouldn't recommend adopting it as a way of life, but I do think that it's something that, you know, it hits you once in a while during your work or whatever you do, is that you sometimes feel like, you know, you're maybe too deep into something, you've been struggling for too long with something, and sometimes the right path is not necessarily try and complete what you're doing or fix it, but sometimes you just, you know, you have to realize that maybe the correct answer is just something much simpler, which may be not perfect, but good enough. So I'd say in the sense of cybersecurity or IT fields, it's something that I see a lot happening, is that we usually try and resolve to what we know best, right? We've known something for a while. This is what we have in our tool belt, and we go back to the same tools, and not every time the same tools will be the right choice to make, right? So I think that you really have to, specifically when there's something new around, whether it's new environment, a new technology, I know major changes that are happening around you. So you really have to be mindful of those things, and you have to verify yourself. You have to verify your own sort of beliefs against the current situation, right? Just simple example, if we have to find a technological solution in a specific field, like we need a code scanning solution, we need a vulnerability management solution, we need something else, it doesn't really matter. So sometimes we're familiar with, you know, top vendors, we know which one is best of breed and which ones are considered more popular, less popular, cheaper, less cheap. I think that sometimes we have to, before going and making the choice, we have to really think what we're trying to achieve. Because, you know, we may think we know which one is the best and which one is the most expensive and which one is the most popular, but we really have to think, do we actually need the best for this situation? Do we really need the specific tool that does that way for the specific situation? So we really have to check this sometimes. And for this example, I think that sometimes is maybe even a lot of times we can fix a solution to a problem without, you know, going all in about it. So we can sometimes, you know, just pull something out of our sleeve. We can reuse something we already have. We can even sort of do something. And if we look at things creatively enough and out of the box, we realize that we can answer some questions with not obvious answers, but they're still good answers. And I think basically at the end of the day, what we're all trying to do is to give good answers, right? It doesn't really matter whether they're the expected classical answers. They just have to be good answers for the questions.
Yeah, I completely hear you there with a lot of the time you have the answer already. So there's a bunch of tools that are overlapping and you may have something in there already. What's quite interesting, I find, in the world of security, when you say you don't need the best of breed in X, Y, or Z, I actually see a lot of condensing of security tools now. So like open source security, host vulnerability, patch management, cloud security, I see them more and more merging into one tool, eventually becoming a CNAPP, and then plus adding, you know, I see SaaS security posture management as the next thing that will just merge into one larger tool. In around that conversation of tools, when you're looking at selecting tools yourself, how do you balance the need for like a full evaluation of a tool against the urgency of needing to put it in there?
First of all, this is very interesting because urgency is sometimes sort of a whole new challenge, and sometimes urgency is more challenging than budget issues or other things, right? Because urgency usually comes from, if it's security, then obviously it's maybe a major risk, but sometimes it may also come from a business case which may be urgent, and we know that the business loves to do business, and we're there to cater for that. First thing I think about this question is really we have to double check and verify with the business owners exactly what they're expecting to get, because and this is a situation I found myself at, you know, time and again in IT and cybersecurity. Many times you're tasked as a, you know, as a head of IT or cybersecurity to bring a product. You know, you get the task, we need a system that does A or a system that does B. And then you can, you know, go ahead and look for systems that do A or B, and you go back with it. And at the end of the day, you realize that the business doesn't really need A or B. They just need a specific function or functionality. And someone has told them about A and B, and they thought this is what they need, but that's not really what they need, right? Because they just heard that it could be, you know, it happens a lot with compliance or regulation, or, you know, they can have this conversation with an auditor, and someone will say SIEM, and someone will say SOAR, and someone will say CNAPP, and this then becomes the problem rather than being the solution. Then the problem becomes, instead of securing our cloud workload, the problem is let's get a CNAP, right? Or instead of auditing or gathering logs, let's find the seam. And I like on those occasions, when the business owner is not ourselves, it's not the security department, then I really like to understand the business need. I want to ask why and what, rather than just bring a solution to a problem, which may not be the actual problem behind the scenes, right? And again, I've been in the situation, I've been tasked to do that, I've done my research, I went to talk with vendors, etc., and chose the products. And then at the end of the day, you know, when you get to the bottom of it, and they ask you, hey, well, why does it cost so much? And why is it so complex? And you explain what they asked for is this and that. And then they realize, wait, this is an overkill. This is not what I need for my use case. And when you get to the bottom of it, you realize that, you know, you may have two or three systems already that can do what the user asked you, right? So if they want an audit, you know, maybe I already have an application that can do that for you. Maybe I already have something that I can reuse to cater for your specific need, right? So it's really important to be connected to the business on their business level and their language. Try to go a bit into their field of play, and then you get better outcomes when you try to translate it to cybersecurity solutions, right? Because you get a better feeling of what exactly the problem you're trying to solve is.
That's great advice. And I think there is often a disconnect between the technical world and solutions and business just generally. It's great advice, actually, for anybody who's in there to get on the level of business, you know, understand what the driver is behind there. Far too often we have situations where we're doing things and people don't know the outcome, or they don't know why they're doing things. And it happens all the way through the stack. You know, you can have people testing for something in the application and not knowing why they're doing a unit test, for example. And I think it's a good example of why everybody should have the vision, even if it seems like it's a waste of time having the conversations. But hey, we're all doing this because of this reason now, you know, and specifically around security tooling and things like that. I imagine a lot of it is to do with compliance. There's usually a compliance reason behind that. It's not necessarily the we're going to get attacked by bad guys or we're not going to get attacked. You know, we're worried about ransomware. So I think for the business to understand why we're doing these things is pretty important. And you could save a lot of time with that piece of advice as well. I imagine enormous, what you just talked about, investigating whatever particular seam tools or saw tools. It's a lot of time, a lot of money and waste effort in there. So really, really great advice on that. Couldn't agree more. If we talk about time wasting, it's a nice lead on, because we want to talk about automation in security management and how that's a game changer. And I know it has challenges of its own. How have you at Plus500 dealt with that problem, approaching integration of automation with your security? And what lessons have you learned? What pitfalls can you avoid other people from?
First of all, I think that game changer is it's maybe an understatement, right? Because it's 2024. Automation is king, right, in cybersecurity, but not only in cybersecurity. And soon it's probably going to be replaced by, you know, AI, etc.
That's it. You get the AI bell. You're the first person to mention it. Bing, bing, bing.
That's it. That's a wrap up.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's true though, but lots of people are scared to do that. I don't mean scared to AI. People are scared to automate security practices because they're so fearful of any impact on them.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I mean, we've all been there, but I think that, first of all, and this is on the reassuring side, I think that if we look at it, you know, even historically, automation in security and IT in general has been there for a while, and it's been there basically forever, right? Because even in the days of traditional endpoint protection, I'm taking you like 15 years back, we always had policies that how to disconnect an endpoint if there's something bad on it, right? Or how to react to an incident on an endpoint. We always knew, delete the file, quarantine the file, disconnect the system from the network. So this is pure automation, right? There's no other word for it. This is the automation by definition. But when we take the automation and we sort of, we take it out from its box as a feature within a system, as a means to an end, and we transform it into the centrally managed automation engine and tons of business logic, it becomes a bit more scary, because you're saying, wait, I used to have this automation with that, which had very limited scope and very limited power, and now I'm giving it more scope, more power. I'm giving it all the power, right? Because I'm going to give it all the permissions and all the privileges, etc., and access everywhere. And it is frightening, like not in the sense of the rise of the machines, right? But in the sense of, is it ready enough? Is it tested enough? It may break. How do we allow it to be efficient and still, as risk-free as possible? So this is, I'm not taking the question back to you. Yeah, I'm just analyzing this. And I think this is really, I can really feel for everyone who has, this pretty natural fear from automation, specifically when we're talking about sensitive operations within our networks, within our data centers, within our, user data operations, etc. In cybersecurity, when we say automation today, we usually, first thing comes to mind is SOAR and, centrally automated response to incidents. And to be honest, and I've seen it plenty of times with colleagues, with friends, it really is hard to implement it well. There's the idea is there, the technology may be there, but it's very hard to make a successful project out of it, right? Not only because of our sort of fear, but also because these types of solutions tend to be expensive, complex, and it takes a lot of time to implement them. So it takes a lot of time to complete those types of projects. So if I'm, for me personally, on the one hand, I understand and I agree that that it's something we have to have today, right? We can't do without it. But on the other hand, we have to find the right balance to make it right, right? We can't just buy a SOAR and expect it to work automatically. It's not magic, yeah? And it doesn't really matter who's the vendor or what tools we're using. It's all about understanding how we integrate all of this together. What's our plan? What's our end game there, right? So what I think, and I know it may not be the best advice for everyone, but what I think works well for me is that I'd say if you're looking to go there, if you feel like you want to automate, but you're afraid, you can start small. You can start small and grow over time. And this is something that I think it has a few benefits, but it's really important to get rid of the of this big fantasy about fixing everything and anything with SOAR and just cover everything. This is maybe not the best approach. I think you should do it step by step, and this will allow you to achieve meaningful results, and you're gonna get those low hanging fruits, some quick wins, it's gonna be cheaper, at least in the start. B, it's going to build up your own confidence and your organization's confidence around the automation, right? Because it's frightening not just for you, it's frightening for everyone. And if you start small, if you start with simple tasks, if you start with tasks that are not in the core of the business and not very dangerous, and you manage to successfully cover them, you're going to build up confidence with the organization. Not unlike people, right? You do the same with people. You give them something, you see that they're successful at it, you give them more. So this is my approach. And also, I think that if you start big and you plan big, so you're going to be talking about a complex project, an expensive project, and you're going to set very high expectations. So the path to meet those expectations is going to be very long, very tedious, and there's going to be so many opportunities for something to break and fail the project. So I like to look at it as a set of short-term goals, getting our targets very close to us, reaching them, and then setting the next target, right? So it doesn't have to be a long, grandiose project. It can be just a step-by-step project.
Makes sense. And, the fear of, I often hear fear of automation because cybersecurity is so impacting on the business in some way. You know, if you're either going to stop somebody doing a process, or you're going to stop something happening on the website, or you're going to stop this or that, and the business hates that. You know, the business always hates security for that. You know, they're always thinking that security is there just to slow them down. But it doesn't make sense to me, because it's the one place where I would rather have false positives, and I would rather have those false positives actioned on. Like if I think around like user access or identity and access management or something, I would rather have 9 false positives in order to catch the one bad guy. That, you know, that seems like a good piece of automation to me. So what? So 9 people had to call support and say, my account's been unfairly locked, and you have to say, I'm sorry, we did that for a security reason. And then you can learn based off that you're too aggressive with your policy. Must be better to be doing that than just have something so loose that it doesn't catch anything. How do you approach that challenge of wanting to put something in place, not knowing what the boundary line is, and then having to deal with the fallout from that?
That's really an everyday challenge for cybersecurity staff. Again, also IT. I mean, there's a lot of places where this happens. It actually relates a lot to my previous answer, because I think that this is a classic spot where we use the step-by-step approach, because what I learned is that on most occasions, the relevant stakeholders, you know, it could be our superiors, it could be top, it could be senior management, it could be someone else, could be key roles in the organization. Usually they understand very well the value of security, right? But they also understand even better the value of the business. And obviously it's their job to make sure the business runs. It's also to some extent their job to make sure the business is secure. And so this is something everybody understands, but not everybody really knows how to approach this. I think that, again, on most occasions, the step-by-step approach for me worked quite well. I mean, it's not always possible, right? Because if you're maybe replacing firewall A with firewall B, so there's a cutover, right? There's a painful cutover, and you want to do it with, you know, zero issues. But if you're talking about endpoint security, if you're talking about anything on your endpoints, on your servers, on your SaaS apps, etc., anything that does prevention, in most cases, you always can start small, but you have to have in mind your end game, right? Because you can't sell to the management that you're gonna deploy, an EDR, and it's gonna always be in detection mode, right? It has to prevent. So the plan is, A, we want to reach this place where we're going to have it covered 100% of the organization, and we're going to have a policy that does A, B, and C. And the way to reach there is, we're going to start with a policy that only does A, and A could be, I don't know, learning mode, monitoring mode, alarm mode, whatever you call it. And we're going to start with that. And we were not going to start with 100% of the organization, right? We're going to start with less sensitive locations, like, I know, teams that we may have redundancy there, so we can allow some issues. We're not going to start with our central databases or our central app servers, right? We're going to start with something in the perimeter, perhaps. We're going to start in QA environments. We're going to start in development environments, but we will show a plan where we can see the end, right? Because we don't want to not complete this type of project. We need the prevention there, but we have to build the same confidence as we had in the automation scenario, right? And the confidence will not be built by words or promises or vendors talking about how great their product are. It's going to be built from the ground, right? We're going to show how it works. We're going to show that it's okay, and we're just going to expand. And you know, it's going to make the project a bit lengthier usually, but you're going to get a lot more credit if it took you longer and you had less. Less damages to the business, less collateral than if you've done it really, really fast, but everyone, went crazy because of that.
Yeah, and requirements is something that seemed to be a mystical beast inside most organizations. So I often find that projects are mid-flow and three quarters of the way through the project, someone says, what are the requirements? Well, what are the requirements to make this successful? And nobody knows. We're just in the middle of a project. So that's a top tip to spend some time and front load, what is your success criteria? Because you can be completely successful on your success criteria, yet the project is a total failure. This is an outcome that can actually happen and vice versa. So it's interesting, and it's more and more as well. And the more I speak to people like yourself, heads of cybersecurity and CTOs or heads of DevOps and things, more and more and more, it's requiring the IT people to become business people, essentially. And that's the problem, which I think a lot of IT professionals, they fall over because nobody starts at management. Yes, everybody starts lower down. You don't need those skills lower down. You just get told, hey, you're implementing this, or hey, your job is to look after tool X, Y, or Z. Suddenly you jump up to another layer when you're asked to then solve problems for the business, and that everything you did prior to that counts technically, but you suddenly have a new role where you're not a business person. So there's a disconnect there. And I think a lot of people don't go through their own, companies don't offer the personal development. Generally, it's something you have to just develop yourself. Have you found something like that in your own life where you've had to upskill your own personal development? And is there something you did around that? Any books you read or something like that?
I think that in this specific sense of, my careers in cybersecurity or IT, I sort of self-developed somehow. Didn't always have very precise intentions or plans about, my long-term future, what I'm going to do. It just somehow, went this way and, I played my cards, right, at any point in time. But I do think this is an important issue because, we used to call it years back, obviously it's still there. We used to talk about IT alignment and this was how, how IT is there to, and it's, it's true in the same way for cybersecurity or DevOps or even R&D, right? We're there to accommodate for the business, right? Not the other way around. So businesses don't have R&D for the sake of R&D. They have R&D for the sake of developing the business, et cetera. And this is true for most functions in the business, right? And I think that one tip that I really think is true here, and this is true for managers, for employees at every level of this type of profession, is that we really have to realize that basically business is the boss, right? It's not us. And whatever we may think is best or ideal or correct or whatever, it's not always true in the business's perspective. And the business perspective, it's basically what's most important, right? And so this is sort of, this is a gap in how we perceive our profession versus how the business perceives our role, right? So we have the role, we have the profession. They're not always one and the same. We have to sort of take the best out of our professional experience and expertise and cater for the specific needs of the specific role in the specific organization, and we need to act with some sort of humility about it rather than ego. It's not about I've worked with CISOs or CIOs or CDOs in the past. They just thought that they were right and that was the way to go. And I sometimes get that feeling, myself, but basically there's no right and wrong. There's what I think is right. There's what the business thinks is right. We have to find, the common path for everyone to be happy about it. And this is to realize that your own opinion is not the most important one, even if you're 100% technically correct, right? Which it's not easy. I suspect it's not easy for anyone, right? But annoying as it may be, this is, I think it's important for success within organizations, right?
Cool. And you talked about the business, but I would always say it's the dog wags the tail. The tail does not wag the dog is what we would say. And it's funny that happens in tech where you have a situation where the tail is wagging the dog, but even more insane, sometimes the dog is asking the tail how to wag. And then you have to say, guys, listen, I'm not here to tell you what to do. We're supposed to be an enabler, but maybe it's a dog with two tails, a tail at one end and a tail at the other end. And there's no heads. It's just two tails. Could be the case. Relating to plus 500, or it doesn't have to be plus 500, actually. It could just be your personal, how you arrange your personal life and style. Any specific showstopper tools that you would highly rate or advise to other companies? So things that have made a real impact that you could share?
I'm not here to sell anything, so I'm not sure I want to go very deep with name dropping, but I found there's a whole wide world out there, right? There's all those traditional vendors out there, and they're doing best of breed code security, and there's some more modern vendors. They do maybe something slicker and something better, but not necessarily best of breed, or not necessarily supporting all the languages and all the technologies the other vendors support. And then there's also the world of the sort of new players, basically CI/CD, complete pipeline security, right, end to end. And I think that this is something that I haven't thought of at the time, but in hindsight, I think that this was a revelation, because my problem in that instance was, okay, I had to address code security, but then you realize there's so many approaches to code security, there's so many solutions today. It's not like there's not just one solution and you have to choose the best from the category. There's actually a few categories that can basically answer that need. And I think that some of the players I saw in the pipeline security niche were very, very impressive. And again, I don't want to recommend any specific solution, but I do think I came across several from that category that really impressed me. They were able to, like you talked before about the CNAPP and SaaS security things converging into one world. So they sort of done that for AppSec, right? In my opinion. So they took code security, they took CI/CD security, they even took cloud security to some extent, and they put it into one product. And there's a few of those. They're coming to you with their solution. They're saying, look, I'm not only gonna solve your code security solution. I'm also gonna solve a couple other problems. Sorry, and it's gonna be modern and sleek, and I'm gonna prioritize it for you. And I think that this is in general, this is. This is where I think the industry will go, because there's so many problems. You can't look for a solution for every problem. You have to see where you can consolidate, where you can work with less vendors, where you can get systems again, more automation and etc., but out of the box, right? So I really think that this is something, if you don't have a good AppSec solution today, or if you're looking to replace your own solution, I would definitely look in that area. And I think I was very surprised by the quality of the products. And yeah, I think they can really cater for, I think most of the industry out there can really use them.
Yeah, all in one tools appear to be the way to go, and I would completely back that, because in the same way that, you know, CNAPPs now cover open source vulnerability, they cover host vulnerability, they cover container vulnerability, they cover secret scans inside your workloads, and, you know, suddenly you don't need 5 or 6 tools for cloud security management. You just need one CNAPP tool like a Wiz or a Lacework or an Orca, for example. Totally makes sense that the same was going to happen for app developers. No need to have something for open source, something for SBOM, something for static code, something for CICD, something for secret scanning, whatever. It makes perfect sense that these overarching tools were going to come on top. And I would totally push people towards an all-in-one solution. The only cases that I see, and okay, I'm coming from the sales side. I'm not a deep in the weeds as a developer, but the only real arguments I come against are when somebody has something in their mind that is really specific, and SBOM would be an example. So lots of people can make SBOMs. You can do open source making SBOMs. But if you want a tool that will not only create an SBOM, but read an SBOM and then become a registry of all SBOMs that you own, you need something specific for that. I didn't see something very cool that does that, that isn't a one tool vendor. And I think that's what you need to go on. You need to go, right, let's assume that you're boilerplate and you have to convince me otherwise that you're not boilerplate. And then we can look at adding another tool. So yeah, I totally hear you on that.
Yeah. I think that, you know, going back in history a bit, we've all worked with all-in-one printer scanners, right? And I don't think anyone has ever thought that the all-in-one printer is the best printer out there or the best scanner out there, right? So if you were a print shop, you probably wouldn't use it because you had better quality printers. So if we're taking that to the world of, I don't know, cloud security or CICD security, so, you know, the cloud infrastructure is just another pillar of our technical tools, you know, in our organization, and code and development is just another pillar we use to move the business, right? But this is essentially not the business, right? What we do is not writing code. What we do is, you know, in our case, fintech. Others do other things, but, you know, we don't need to solve this problem to its fullest extent. We have to be responsible and we have to be good enough, but we don't really need to go, you know, to go the extra mile to cover ground which we're not looking to go to in the first place. So this is what I think about those. So there's obviously all-in-one is not the answer to everything, but, you know, in today's reality, when we have so many, you know, vulnerabilities and gaps, and obviously our security and IT budgets aren't always aligned with the new emergence of new threats, and then yeah, it's up to us to make the best use of what we have, and if that means going, you know, consolidating and going to all-in-one products, there's nothing wrong with that as long as we know that they cover the essentials that we really, really need, right?
Couldn't agree more. And I'm going to steal your multi-scanner, printer, copier analogy next time I'm trying to convince somebody to buy that solution from me.
Yeah, great. I also stole it from someone, but I can't tell you who, so...
great. Nothing is new. Nothing is original. Yeah. Everything is only stolen and repackaged.
Yeah,
so that's
you
okay.
Can credit it to folklore, right?
Yeah. Exactly. One question I'd like to ask everybody we have on the show. If you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice, what would it be? And that could either be like something to help you with a situation or something to avoid.
Oh, wow. This is, I know there's a lot comes to mind, but probably the first intuitive thing I'll say is just buy Bitcoin, right?
Right.
Because I hope I'm not, I mean, I really believe I'm not the first one to say this, but I think that what, you know, we all make mistakes, right? And we all learn from mistakes, but this is really painful because I think you feel the most pain when you know you were there and you didn't act upon it. This is more disappointing than just, you know, not being there, right? So if you were aware of Bitcoin and you thought it's stupid and it makes no sense, you may have been right, yeah? It's maybe stupid and doesn't make sense, but you could have been rich today. This is my, you know, on a personal note, this is a mistake I've made in the past.
It's a totally great answer. Not one we would ever expect, but hey, comes from the heart and will resonate. I think almost everybody has a Bitcoin story or a friend of a friend who has a Bitcoin story. So it's,
yeah,
you know, it's in the zeitgeist. It's in the zeitgeist right now. And around yourself and your professional career, you know, the number of security things that happen every single day and new attack vectors and vendors that solve those problems, you know, it's ridiculous now. As in cybersecurity, it becomes ridiculous. So what do you do to stay on top? How do you stay on top of the latest threats and technologies, etc.?
That's always a challenge, you know, because when you phrase the question, I was just, you know, I had those memories re-emerging from all those times I had vendors approach me and offer me solutions to problems I never knew I had. And which, in fact, I have had them, right? I just never thought about them as problems or never thought they were problems. I think this is the reality in our landscape is that we're always going to have the bucket of gaps and problems is always going to be bigger than the bucket of our resources to deal with it. So I think that first thing, it's a very general maybe idea in the approach of this challenge, but I think that it's really important to frequently assess and reassess yourself and your environment. And your environment, by that I mean not only your organization or department, but also, you know, the landscape of threats, the landscape of your specific maybe market you're in, geolocation, whatever, right? Because this is again, you know, sort of the traditional way or by the book is we're used to, you know, in cybersecurity, we're used to doing these annual risk assessments and annual PTs and annual user access reviews, etc. But in today's reality, right, if we're working in annual cycles, how many risks or gaps will we not see if we just look at them once in a year, right? And this is basically what you're talking about. The emergence of threats is a lot quicker than the traditional ways we treat security. And of course, the first answer that comes to mind is, again, automation, right? I mean, to some extent, I'm not talking specifically about this big monstrous SOAR, but you can automate as much as possible in the processes of risk management, vulnerability management, security posture assessment, etc., right? So we talked about some of these things within the code security, within the cloud security, but this is very general. This is a process managing your own risks and vulnerabilities. In cybersecurity, I don't think it makes sense to look at it as an annual process anymore, right? It's continuous, just like, you know, development has its continuous integration, continuous deployment. This is the same. You have to do it continuously. And to do something continuously, you really have to do it automated, right? So this is one thing. We really want to catch the issues as soon as possible. And, you know, this could be anywhere, but, you know, shift left. There's no other answer to that, basically. I think we have to shift left wherever we can, and it's usually going to be achieved with automation. Of course, where we can, there's also, you know, procedures and policies we can revise and see and you know, get also the get other stakeholders to help us with that, right? Because sometimes, you know, the sooner we know about things, the sooner we're in the loop. So the sooner we can address to issues and assist with them. And this is, you know, it comes back to sort of the boring issue of awareness. Because, you know, at the end of the day, and awareness is a very old challenge in cybersecurity. But at the end of the day, security does rely on employees, right? And each one of them is another gateway to a company, to the organization, to the database. And we have to put effort into making the employees realize how important they are, not just in, you know, fulfilling their day-to-day roles and the tasks that they're assigned, but also in protecting the company as a whole, because, you know, the strength of the chain is the strength of the weakest link, right? And it's sort of, I don't, I'm looking at it like a, you know, like a football match, right? Because you have on your team, you have just one goalkeeper, right? So he can do things, he's allowed to do things that other players can't, like he can catch the ball with his hands. But in order to not concede any goals, you can't just rely on a goalkeeper, right? It's a team effort, and you expect everyone to do some defense, and even the best keeper will not be able to deny all attempts, right? So we need to build a team that will be also able to mitigate as many attempts as possible to get the keeper to only treat some, you know, as few attempts as possible. This is basically like a 60-second metaphor to how it feels to be is cybersecurity in an organization, right? You're the goalkeeper, so you're somewhere behind there. You're hoping no one will reach you, but when they do, you have to be ready, and you want everyone, you know, everyone up front to realize what you're doing, to realize how important it is to keep those threats away from you, because you can't stop all of them.
Mm. Super great advice, and just really, really wise insights, and they might even seem like semi-basic insights, but I think we lose sight of things so often in the IT world. And aligning with the business, looking to automate, looking to consolidate, taking things step by step, you know, they're super, super nice bits of information peppered with the reasons why we do that. So it's been a really rich conversation with you. Really appreciate you taking the time. Totally great to have you on the show. Anything else you'd like to add in closing?
I just think I'll address what, you know, one word you said basic, and I think that this is really important, because basic is not necessarily bad, right? And I said a few things about it already, but I think that it does lead me to another tip, which I think it's attributed to Winston Churchill, but I didn't fact check it, right? That perfectionism is the enemy of progress, and in our case, you know, we have the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule, etc. And I think that in cybersecurity management today, it's very true. It's not in the sense that we shouldn't strive to cover everything, but in the sense that sometimes it's impossible or not the right thing to do. So sometimes, looking at the complex, big, complicated project solutions, it's not that it's wrong. It just may lead us to not optimal results, right? Because the optimal results will be to make the best use of our resources to cover as many risks or to bring as much value to the business as we can. And value is not necessarily bringing big revolutions. It can be fixing a lot of basic things as well. And yeah, I think this is important to remember. I mean, sometimes doing basic things, simple things, can bring a lot of value, sometimes even more than making very big things, right? So we don't have to be afraid of, you know, chip in here and there and do some small things, because at the end of the day, we just want to bring value to the business.
Sometimes it's more valuable to bring a multifunction printer scanner than it is to bring AI technology, for example. great wise words. Fantastic, Sino. Thank you so much. This episode was produced and edited by Daniel Ohana and Thomas Movidzon. Sound editing and mix by Bren Russell. I'm Ganesh Diorsun, a senior solutions architect. And if you're ready to deep dive and start transforming the way you approach security, then the team and myself at Global Dots are at your disposal. It's what we do, and if I don't say so myself, we do it pretty well. So have a word with the experts, don't be shy, and remember that conversations are always for free. Find us at globaldots.com.